Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is The Last Laugh. I'm Matt Wilstein from The Daily Beast, and if you don't live in Los Angeles like me, then you might not realize we are deep in four-year consideration season ahead of next month's Emmy Awards. We have actually had a bunch of this year's nominees as guests on this podcast, including Martin Short from Only Murders in the Building, Ray Seahorn from Better Call Saul, both Bill Hader and Henry Winkler from Barry, Natasha Rothwell from The White Lotus, and more. But since Emmy voters have just a few more days to cast their ballots, I thought now would be the perfect time to revisit an interview I did with the star of one of my favorite shows of the past year, Adam Scott. Adam is actually nominated for lead actor in a drama series for his remarkable performance in the Apple TV Plus show Severance. But as we discuss in this conversation, he was able to channel his history as an actor in workplace comedies like Party Down and Parks and Rec to bring some surprising warmth and humor to an otherwise dark and disturbing show. Here's an example of what I'm talking about from the first episode. In this clip, Adam's character Mark S. is welcoming a new employee to the severed floor of the mysterious Lumen Industries. Her name is Helly R., and she is played by the equally incredible Britt Lower, who, by the way, should have been nominated for an Emmy as well.
I think I know where a disconnect is coming from.
What?
Well, there was a preamble, which I was supposed to read before the survey to lead into the questions, but I unfortunately skipped that, went straight into the survey.
Am I livestock?
I'm sorry?
Like, did you grow me as food and that's why I have no memories?
Do you think we grew a full human, gave you consciousness?
I don't know.
Did your nails?
I don't know. I don't know you.
No, you're not livestock. Good Lord.
Then what's my name?
Helly. Your name is Helly. Helly R. Please.
So we don't get too spoilery about Severance in this episode, but if you haven't gotten a chance to see it yet, I highly recommend you check it out, especially before season 2 is set to premiere, hopefully early next year. We also, of course, talk a lot about Adam's comedy career, from his breakthrough role as Derek in Step Brothers to his long run on Parks and Rec as Ben Wyatt. So let's get to it. Here's me with Adam Scott. I'm very excited to have you on. I know, especially you must be busy. You're in the middle of filming Party Down right now, aren't you?
Yeah. We started last week, so we shot our first episode, and then tomorrow we start episode number 2.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to get to Severance because I'm very excited to talk to you about that. But before we get to that, just with Party Down, I mean, what has it been like to all of a sudden be back making this show 12 years after you ended?
It's really weird in a really lovely way. Just being together again and the pink ties and just because there's that, you know, just like any group of friends, there's that particular chemistry that switches on when a particular group of people are together. And this whole past week, we've all been kind of marveling at how long it's been, but then how it doesn't really feel like it's been that long when we are all together and laughing at something stupid that someone says or does. And someone brought out a picture the other day of all of us when we got together after we had finished shooting the second season, and we all look so young. And it's just been really strange. But the great thing, you know, we were shooting a scene on Saturday, and I was looking at Jane and Megan and Martin and Ryan and Ken, and, you know, just like in the scene, watching them all be hilarious. And I just couldn't stop. I just was realizing how much I just missed them, but also I missed these characters and how great it is to watch these ridiculous, fun, sweet characters back in action. And John Enbaum hasn't missed a beat, and what he's writing for everyone is just so terrific and funny. And so far so good. It's been really, really, really fun.
Yeah, I love the show so much, the original two seasons.
Thanks.
And you know, I don't know much about what this new season is about or what the premise is or anything, but I have to say it is kind of depressing to think that they are all still cater waiters over a decade later.
Well, you know, I certainly don't want to spoil anything, but there's a really fun way of kind of showing how the time has passed. And also we have these new cast members who are
terrific. I just saw the announcement come out. Jennifer Garner is a series regular in the new season.
Jennifer is a series regular, and Tyrell Jackson Williams and Zoe Chow are both new series regulars. And then James Marsden's doing a couple episodes. So we've just been, and there are more fun guest stars and stuff coming up. It's been really fun.
Yeah.
Really
I was bummed to hear that Lizzie Kaplan's not coming back, but hopefully, you guys will still make it great, because you guys had such great chemistry on the show.
Yeah. We were all bummed, including Lizzie. I mean, it was all, you know, it was kind of a blow for sure, because she's incredible and brings so much to the show and to the role of Casey. You know, of course we were hoping, as she was, that it could all be worked out, but it's so hard to nail everyone down for. And so it was like, well, do we continue on? You know, it's like the stars aligned to get all of these people together, and
not sure it could happen again.
Yeah, maybe it'll happen again, and Lizzie will be available. Who knows?
So speaking of spoilers, Severance is a very spoilery kind of show. I want to figure out a way that we can talk about it, you know.
Sure.
And so I think what we're going to do is...
Have you watched it?
So I've watched the entire first season.
Oh, you did? Wow. Okay.
I'm kind of obsessed. Hopefully this is not too embarrassing. I've now started watching it for the second time.
Oh, cool.
Because it's
glad.
Really fun to watch for the second time, because you notice all these things that you didn't see the first time. So
yeah.
I think what we're going to do is put this out when people have at least gotten the chance to watch the first two,
so that
we can talk
That's
about
great.
It and it's sure. not just us talking about something that nobody can see. I mean, this...
By the way, can I just say that I love this podcast?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I listened to... You have great guests.
Thank you so much. I've had a lot of your Parks and Rec folks on over the years, so I'm excited to have you on as well. This show... Severance is, I didn't know much about it, you know, before I started watching it. And it kind of came out of nowhere. It's not, I don't think it's based on pre-existing material, right? It's just as a totally, you know, original idea, and it's a very original idea. Can you talk about how this came to you and what you sort of thought about the whole premise of it when you first got to read it?
Yeah. It was, we just figured it out the other day that it was, it's like exactly 5 years ago, it was January 2017, because I remembered exactly when it was, because I was standing like knee deep in snow up at Sundance when Ben called me and just sort of gave me the quick, you know, three sentence elevator pitch of the show, just kind of the big idea, the big hook of the show, the idea that it's a world where there's technology, so you can get something inserted in your brain where when you go to work, you have no idea who you are or what you do in the outside world, and vice versa. When you're in the outside world, you leave work, you have no idea who you are there or what you did there. So you have these two separate lives, so you can completely focus on work and you can just enjoy your personal life when you're not at work anymore. That's the idea that whoever's peddling this technology says you can enjoy both and not have to worry about the other, right? And so it was just sort of, that was the idea that I heard then, not having read a script or anything. And I just couldn't stop thinking about this cool, hooky science, sci-fi idea, which is, I just couldn't stop thinking about it and was hoping over the years that this would come to fruition, because you never know what things are going to actually turn into shows and what things are just going to be cool ideas that don't go anywhere. And you know, we just sort of kept in touch over the next couple of years, Ben and I, and then it finally kind of came around, and Dan Erickson, who created the show, this is all his world. He started writing, and the Apple bought it from Red Hour, picked it up, and luckily I was able to hang on. Ben had called me back then because he was thinking of me for this role, but you never know what's going to happen. And so luckily Ben kept thinking of me, and we just sort of stayed in touch about it. And eventually it became a show. And then when I finally read a script, which was not until like 2019, I believe, 2018, 2019, all I read was the first one. And first of all, it was exactly the kind of show that I, as an audience member, look for and want to watch. But then also it was a role like that I felt like, and it sounds corny, but felt like I'd been waiting my whole career for, you know, like I'd been spending the past 20 some odd years earning this role. It was just such a cool part and such a cool show. So anyway, I was just hoping something wouldn't happen or someone better or more famous would come along and they would come to their senses. And so it all ended up falling into place and working out, and I got to do it. So that's sort of the journey it took. And then as Dan wrote more and more, I got to read the episodes and then talk to the two of them about the world and the company Lumen and everything, all the mythology and history behind all of it. And it's just sort of a fascinating world.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about not being able to stop thinking about the idea, just hearing it. And I think it is such a thought provoking show, like watching it, you just can't stop thinking about and wondering, you know, asking different questions about it. Was it as much of a sort of mind fuck for you to read it and then act it as it is for us to watch it?
Yes. Because we shot the whole show at once, right? Like a big 9-hour movie. So we were jumping all over the place. Also, Aoife McArdle directed 3 of the episodes as well. And so we were jumping around, not just innie and outie, but also episode to episode over the 9-10 months that we were shooting the show. It was a mindfuck in that we just had to constantly be keeping track of sort of the math problem of the outie mark, the innie mark, where each of them are in the story, but then just sort of on a base level, what's the difference between the two and why is that a difference? And all of that, it was just a constant, but then also the kind of overall story and Patricia's character, all of it is sort of this puzzle and this, mindfuck.
Yeah. It's this incredibly interesting acting challenge for you and for, you know, some of the other actors on the show, playing one person, but two versions of the same person in a way. How did you think about their differences and what your innie mark and your outie mark, how they're different, how you wanted to portray that in what you were doing?
Yeah, it was really fun. I mean, it was hard. It was challenging. It was all of those things. You know, it was important to Ben and I and Dan, the Erickson, the creator, that it be one guy. It's not like, you know, the kind of knee-jerk reaction for an actor is like, oh, cool, I can,
yeah, really,
you know,
different,
one of them
yeah.
will have a mustache and a limp or something, you know. Yeah. But this is definitely one guy, and it's just different parts of the same guy, almost like different halves, you know. So it was important that it feel that way. And so it kind of, it became like I said, like sort of a math problem, like an addition and subtraction, like the Audi mark has 40 some odd years of life experience, of sorrow and joy and, you know, all the things that go into like a full life. And he's in this place where he's grieving his wife and he's sort of stuck. He hasn't moved on. He doesn't want to move on. That's why he's doing this. And then the innie mark is, for all intents and purposes, like 2 years old. but he also carries, just kind of physiologically carries all of this, these feelings. They're still in there when he wakes up in the innie world. He just doesn't know what, how to locate or name what those feelings are. So that stuff is present, but it's not really, it's not really his in a way. So, and he's in a similar sort of stasis in that he's in this place. He's been there a couple of years and he's not interested in questioning what's going on and what he's doing, any of that. And so both for the Audi and Innie, it takes these other people kind of coming in and upsetting each apple cart. And so as far as the kind of the practically playing the two different sides of the character, it's how to kind of make it personal for me. I just sort of, you know, sort of started thinking about the Audi being more the stuff, just me, the things I hate about myself, and started trying to think about the Innie as the things that may be more my attributes, right? And like the Audi, it's like Audi's like not always comfortable socially. I have bad posture, all of that stuff. And because he's in this place in his life where he just wants to check out for 10 hours a day. And then Innie is sort of more enthusiastic about what may be going on and what he may be able to accomplish in this world, even though he's stopping himself curiosity-wise from thinking through what he's actually doing. He just wants to sort of please this authority figure who's in front of him.
Yeah, it also for me raised so many questions about nature versus nurture and sort of who we would be with no culture, with no memories, with nothing. You know, would you be the same person? And, it, you know, I think the answer is no, that you know, so much of what we, our life experience, our conscious life experience impacts who we are.
That's right. And I think also when it's a situation like it is in the show, you could even start wondering why, if you're in the inside world, you could start wondering like why you would do this to me, why you would create me just to keep me down here, you know?
So I'll never leave here.
You'll leave at 5. Well, actually, they stagger our exit, so 5:15. But it won't feel like it, not to this version of you anyway.
Do you have a family?
You'll never know.
And I have no choice.
Well, every time you find yourself here, it's because you chose to come back.
I imagine, you know, beyond the idea and the premise that working with Ben Stiller as a director was part of the appeal. You'd previously worked with him on Secret Life of Walter Mitty, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is he like as a director?
It's hard to go back to other directors after you get to work with someone you connect with and feel safe with and trust as much as I feel all of those things about Ben. I feel like, especially with a role like this, I really had to just let go and sort of put all of my trust in him, because I couldn't monitor myself. I just sort of didn't have the bandwidth to keep an eye on what I was doing. And so, because usually I can sort of have a a third eye on what I'm doing so I can sort of direct myself a little bit and know if something's working or not. You just kind of have that instinct. And I certainly still had that. But I also was placing all of my trust in him because I trust his taste more than anyone's. I think he's one of our great filmmakers. I mean, if you look at what he's made, everything from Reality Bites to Cable Guy to Tropic Thunder to Dannemora, it's unbelievable. It really is. And I think Dannemora is one of the great American works of the past.
Yeah, that was his. That was
decades.
His previous, I mean, kind of his first real foray into drama too was Escape at Dannemora, the previous show that he did, and this show is very dramatic in a lot of ways, very dark in a lot of ways. Also has a lot of humor sprinkled throughout, which I think I'm noticing even more on the second watch. I did wonder if there's any concern that people will think this is a comedy because it's you and Ben Stiller, and now you know the two of you are both so well known for comedy at this point.
I don't know. I think that's something that Ben's interested in, is the kind of idea of this surface of a workplace comedy. You know, the especially when the show starts, it kind of first go into Lumen. It feels like that. It's like a quick, fun, sort of fizzy office comedy. And then there's just something lurking underneath, something a little more sinister. You start to just can't quite pinpoint it, but there's something going on here. And I think maintaining both of those things is a really fun thing that he was interested in exploring,
yeah,
and maybe subverting a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder if that's, you know, part of why he thought of you for the role, because you are someone who has this, you have, you know, roots in drama in a way, but then are very well known for office comedies.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it could be.
Coming up, we look back at the role that set Adam's career off in an entirely new and unexpected direction. And he reveals the moment he finally felt like he knew what he was doing, improvising with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're enjoying this episode and want to hear more, please make sure you are following The Last Laugh wherever you get your podcasts. By subscribing to The Last Laugh, you can listen to our conversations with other Parks and Recreation cast members like Nick Offerman, Patton Oswalt, and Ben Schwartz, and everything else from our free archive. And you'll be the first to hear new episodes when they drop every Tuesday. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know how much you love the show and who you want to hear next. Now, back to Adam Scott. I do kind of want to go back and talk about some of the other, you know, stuff from your career and with a comedy focus, because this is a podcast that typically focuses on comedy. You know, how did you end up transitioning to comedy after, you know, so many years of dramatic work? Because that, it really, you know, I think the earlier part of your career, you were doing a lot of drama, and then you became very well known for comedy more recently. Was that intentional? Was it by accident? How did you kind of think about that at the time?
It was by accident at first, because, yeah, like you said, I'd just been doing like serious stuff. And I always sort of thought that's what I would be. Well, if I finally kind of got some traction, that's where it would be, because I always sort of saw myself as a as a serious actor, and was on this HBO show, Tell Me You Love Me, which was like 15 years ago, that was very dark and serious.
Yeah. There weren't a lot of laughs on that one.
No. And so that was sort of the thing I was doing when the audition for Step Brothers came up, and it was just sort of a fluke because someone else had the role in Step Brothers and then had to pull out for one reason or another. I think it was a scheduling thing, and so they had to cast the role quickly. And I sort of went in there without thinking about it too much and just leaned into this ridiculous character. And I love assholes. I think assholes are really funny, and I love watching them and playing them. And so I just went in and sort of did this for Adam McKay and Will Ferrell, and sort of fun. And then I got the role, and it was just a total fluke. So that's sort of where it started. And then doing that movie was, you know, it was an adventure. I didn't know what I was doing. And it was like, you know, as far as improvising goes, it was like learning how to throw the javelin at the Olympics, like with the audience and all the cameras and all of that. And I think by the end, I was sort of getting the hang of it, like, oh, okay. And it was really fun and exhilarating, you know, to just sort of watch, you know, these guys make this giant movie and sort of just be shooting from the hip. I had always seen movies, particularly big movies, as this very careful process. Like, okay, we've got all of this expensive equipment and these beautiful sets. We need to treat this with the utmost delicacy and respect. And these guys were just like, all right, we've got all these expensive cameras and beautiful sets. Let's fuck around and see what hilarious stuff we can come up with.
Yeah, that's definitely like a privilege to get to do that.
Yeah, and I just loved it and had a lot of fun. And so by the end of that, like, I don't know, 4 months or whatever, I felt like I'd finally sort of started getting the hang of it and didn't want to stop. It was just sort of this really fun, you know, going to work and it just being a blast all day was not something I had experienced, like doing more sort of dramatic stuff, you know.
Was there a moment during the making of Step Brothers that you felt it kind of click in terms of what you were doing and that you felt like you were succeeding at the improv part of it?
Yeah, I think it was. I remember one scene where it wasn't, and it was close to the beginning of the shoot, and it was the treehouse scene where I like pop up and talk to the guys, and then they punch me and I fall out. And it was right when we had started shooting, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I was really intimidated and freaked out, and I had tried to come up with a bunch of jokes ahead of time and wrote them down,
and that's not and how it was works. Just
no, and but I didn't really know, and the scene in the movie's great because they you know they cut it together great and everything, but then as we went on, I was sort of little by little sort of letting go, and I stopped gripping the back quite so tight and just sort of watching these guys and how they did it. And I mean, if you're going to watch anyone, those are the guys. And so by the end, I remember there was a scene, I think it was at the dinner table, and John Riley said something, and then I kind of set him up for something else. And we just started kind of going back and forth, and it was like, okay, this is really fun. And once you kind of find that groove with another person, there's nothing more fun or exciting than that. And you can really dig out some great, funny stuff from that.
Robert, have you ever been down to the southern part of the Gulf on the Bonita Run?
Always wanted to. I hear it's amazing.
It is. It's gorgeous.
Are Bonita fish big?
What?
Dale, don't interrupt the man when he's telling a story.
No, it's fine, Robert.
I was asking about the story.
What's this guy's deal?
I don't know, son. It's okay. Well, Dale, they are what's called a trophy fish. So
Yeah, they're pretty big. I'm sorry. anyway. Oh God, I'm sorry. Now I forget where my story was going.
Ah, damn it, Dale.
No.
Robert.
What?
I asked him.
Okay.
No, he can join in, Robert. It's really okay.
Well, I asked him twice not to interrupt.
Listen, gang, don't be mad at Dale for ruining the story and possibly the evening. It's totally fine. I have a lot more stories.
Derek, that you do.
Yeah.
That you do.
Guilty as charged with the stories.
Oh, God, you're impressive.
There was also the singing in the car, which wasn't really much improvisation, but I was also kind of like, oh, this is going to be really weird and funny. And if it works, this will be like a really, really great scene. So there were those kind of points, both kind of towards the end of the movie, where I was sort of like, okay, I think I could maybe find my way to getting the hang of this.
Yeah, I love that it's, you know, you and Catherine Hahn was really, the two of you really broke through in that movie. I mean, and then have gone on to do so many incredible things. But that was really, I think, the beginning that of first time that a lot of people had seen both of you, probably, in the comedy world.
I think both, I remember the first day we kind of looked at each other and we're like, wow, we're here. And this is hallowed ground that we're able to both be here. And she really excelled from day one. Catherine knew exactly what she was doing and was brilliant from day. She didn't have this like steep learning curve like I did. She was on it. She was, 100%.
So then once you were in that movie, I mean, what did that open up for you in terms of what opportunities or what you wanted to do or this new direction that your career went in?
You know, it's kind of a slow burn. It was kind of like, you know, Step Brothers is this funny movie because when it came out, it was a successful movie. But as far as Step Brothers and culture as we know it today, it took a couple years of it marinating and getting on cable or DVD or whatever, and people really watching it over and over again.
Now it's like widely considered one of the funniest movies ever made, I would say.
Yeah, and at the time, like the reviews weren't
did not say that.
No. Not really. But I mean, you know, it came out and it was later that it was like a couple months after Step Brothers came out that, the guys were like, hey, this network Stars picked up Party Down, 'cause we had made a homemade pilot a couple years before that. And then, so it was a couple months after Step Brothers came out that Party Down got picked up and we could actually make that show. I think also the guest spot on Eastbound and Down came soon after Step Brothers was a thing. So it was sort of, it ended up being more of a trifecta of Step Brothers, Party Down and Parks that sort of over a period of a year and a half, 2 years, where all of that stuff sort of came around the same time, and it sort of all contributed to a career actually solidifying and that being tilted towards comedy.
Yeah, I mean, besides, you know, you've worked with all these incredible people, you know, in terms of creators, you know, Ben Stiller, Adam McKay, and then, you know, Mike Schur is another one who, you know, you've had a long and great relationship with. I know you originally auditioned for The Office, right? And then and then also originally auditioned for the first season of Parks and Rec, but it wasn't until second season that you got on. So what was the whole story there? Because that was a long process with some disappointment along the way. So, I mean, what was that like for you to kind of keep going back to that that world until you finally, you know, made your way onto the show?
Yeah, it was, you know, I, The Office, I was already a fan of the Ricky Gervais version. And so I went and auditioned for that. And you know what? I probably leaned too hard into my idea of what the British one was, but I think I had a couple auditions for it, you know, and was certainly disappointed, but I think Krasinski's way better choice, obviously, for that role. I can't even imagine anyone else doing that. And as far as parks go, I ended up on the show when I should have been on the show. I think if I didn't end up getting it originally, I just went and auditioned for it, and I don't think there were even roles yet. I think it was, it's not like I was auditioning for a specific thing. And I don't think I was quite ready. And I think after doing Party Down for a while, I kind of relaxed and I needed to do that. I'm certainly not a person that believes in like things happen when they should or things happen for a reason or anything like that. But I know that the way it ended up playing out was the right way for me. And I'm glad that by the time I ended up on Parks that I really felt like I could do it, and I was ready, and I knew how to do it.
What was it like to then come into that show that already existed and these characters who, you know, maybe you'd already been watching, and then all of a sudden be in that world?
Yeah, I was a big fan of the show going in. I knew Nick because Megan Mullally was on Party Down, and so Nick would be around, and we had become kind of friends through Megan. And but I didn't really know. I guess I knew some of them from just around, but not well or anything. And walking into a show that's like up and running and a kind of a tight machine already, jumping onto a moving train like that can be a little nerve wracking. And I was, you know, a little nervous at first, but they were all super welcoming, and it's a very warm atmosphere there, fun place to work, and just kind of immediately felt at home. And really from minute one, I just didn't want it to stop. I just loved going there. And the only other show I had really been on as a series regular was Party Down at that point. So I was, you know, 15 or so years into a quote unquote career. And I was just sort of, I just knew I would never take any of this for granted. I just loved having a regular job to go to. It just felt great. And it happened to be a great show with incredible people. So there isn't a moment in the 5 years I was there that I, took it for granted or got sick of it or any of that stuff. It was just, and I don't think anyone else either. We were all really happy to be there.
Yeah. One of the more surreal moments I imagine was when you shared the screen with Joe Biden, who was then vice president.
How did you do this?
Called in a few favors.
Excuse me, dear.
A few hundred favors. Mr. Vice President, Ben Wyatt from Congressman Murray's office.
Hey, Ben, Dave told me you were going to be coming by, and you must be Leslie Knope. Welcome. Welcome.
My name just came out of your mouth.
Well, yeah, it did.
Well, this isn't happening. This isn't real.
What was he like as a scene partner and acting with him?
He was really cool, and kind of off camera, he was incredibly charming, and you immediately see, like when you know, before we even started shooting, he kind of walked in the room, just immediately connected with every single person. It's like, oh yeah, this is a professional politician who makes everyone feel great. And, you know, Aubrey was there, and they're both Delaware. But you know, Aubrey is a Delaware native, and he started telling a story. He already knew who Aubrey was, and that she's from there. I think they had met once before, and started telling a Delaware story that Aubrey had something to do. You know, he was just great, and he was really good in the scene. It was very weird because sometimes those appearances with politicians or sports stars and stuff, sometimes they're a little
stiff. You had a lot of politicians on the show over the years. I think
a bunch of them ended up doing it. He was really cool. And then we went back and shot a scene actually in the vice presidential mansion like a year or two later. And he and Dr. Biden were so cool and so nice and personable. I can't say that I know them at all, but I was able to discern, they're really good people. That it's a welcome change from where we were.
Yeah. You know, you got pretty well known from Parks for playing a nice guy. You mentioned that you liked playing assholes a lot, and then you kind of got a chance to do it again on The Good Place.
Going back
to your asshole character. Was that fun to kind of stop playing the nice guy for a while after many years of that?
Yeah, especially for Mike and there's some of the same writers as on Parks, and getting to have them, you know, kind of, I know Mike loves Step Brothers and loves it when I do and say things that are shitty. Like as a character, he thinks it's funny when, you know, he thinks assholes are funny, I guess too. It was a blast. And that show is really, really great. And I think I worked on it before it had ever aired, actually, in that first season. And so just kind of getting to see this whole world and hear about the, you know, everything that he had kind of set up and this whole world he had created was fascinating. I think it's a really special show.
Oh, hello. Hi. You look like a piece of crap. Are you Eleanor?
Dude, you're like a legend in The Bad Place. Check this out. Huh?
It's
pretty great, right?
Trevor, do you know what caused this mistake? Because I cannot figure it out.
No, we're stumped. But don't sweat it, champ. She's definitely one of ours. So we'll just roll on out, and you can get back to putting rainbows up your butt or whatever you do here, okay? Let's hit it, sweetheart. We got a long ride.
What? Right now?
Trevor, for decency's sake, let her have some goodbyes.
Ugh. God, good people are the worst. Okay, 30 minutes. We got to get back for The Bachelor. I'm going to be pissed if I miss the rose ceremony.
So what I want to do now is our segment called The First Laugh. So I'm going to run through some firsts in your life and career related to comedy. Hopefully we can talk about them.
Sure.
So going all the way back, do you remember the first piece of comedy that made you laugh really hard as a kid, or one of the first?
That's a really good question. You know, I would imagine it's Steve Martin, either on SNL or his records, because I, you know, my brother and I had his records and would play them and, you know, listen to them all the time. And also the pictures on the records, the Best Fishes, kind of 8x10 that came with either Wild and Crazy Guy or Let's Get Small. I don't remember which one, but Steve Martin was what we were all about back then.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we said, you know, you came to comedy later in your career, but do you remember the first time that you knew you were funny, that you were able to make other people laugh?
Yes, I read, by the way, I tried for a while in my career. I remember telling my agent once, like, you know, my friends think they tell me I'm funny.
Yeah,
he's
swear.
Like, no, yeah. No, you're not. It's okay. Cause I was trying to get an audition for a multicam like comedy that Tori Spelling, a pilot that Tori, and cause I needed a job so badly. And I just wanted the audition. I could not even get in the room. And he's like, look, you're not funny. It's okay. Like, you know, so anyway, I had a subscription to Mad Magazine and collected back issues. I was really into it as a kid. And I remember I read something in either a Don Martin comic or one of the other ones. And so I always kept these jokes I read in Mad Magazine sort of stocked and tried to deploy them at the right time as a little kid. And I remember once we were having a big family dinner and there were friends over, like a bunch of people over for a barbecue or something. And my mom said, she was like telling a story for one reason or another. She said the line, waiter, there's a fly in my soup, which is sort of the old tropey thing that people, I don't remember why she was saying it. And I was like probably 5, 6 years old. She said, waiter, there's a fly in my soup. And I just sort of blurted out, "Don't worry, ma'am, the spider in your salad will eat it." Because that was something I had read in Mad Magazine. And I just remember the room kind of going silent and then bursting into this like laughter that this little kid said something like that. And just felt amazing. Just felt great. Anyway, that's the first thing I remember as being like getting a laugh or whatever. So anyway.
I have to ask about what is now your very first IMDb credit. Do you know what it is? The
Jet at 21?
No, it's being an extra in the REM's Drive video.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So I know you're a huge REM fan. So what was...
That's right.
How did you end up being an extra in an REM video?
Well, it was the summer between years at school. So it was the summer of 92. And there was some sort of radio contest that a friend of mine heard about that if you call in at a certain time, you can win a role in an REM video. Little did we know, it was just you can drive to Los Angeles and be an extra for three nights. And either way, it sounded great to us as 19-year-olds who had nothing else to do. So we called in and all of us signed up for it and jumped in a car. We were up in Santa Cruz, California, up in Northern California, and all jumped in a car and drove down to Los Angeles. And it was they shot it out in the middle of I forget the name of the dam. There's a dam up in the valley where there's this big kind of concrete volume out in the middle of this park. And so 200 or 300 people just kind of grouped together, and Michael Stipe would fall off of a ladder into the crowd, and we would all just carry him. He would just crowd surf, and they had cameras pointed down at us, and did it for 2 12-hour nights.
Oh my God.
But as a 19-year-old who loves that band, it was like going to Disneyland as a little kid and seeing Mickey Mouse and Goofy and whatever, and getting to like yell out things to them, and they were nice enough, but now looking back, they're like 32-year-old guys that we saw as like these elder statesmen or whatever.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. But it was so, so fun getting to do that.
I've really enjoyed all of your podcasts about REM
and you
too, and everything with Scott Aukerman. But I wanted to ask if there's a memory that stands out from the many podcast that you did on Comedy Bang Bang with Chelsea Peretti and Harris Whittles. That fans will know as the Farts and Procreation series, which were some of the funniest episodes of that podcast and just really, really fun to listen to, and really felt like we were getting to, be in the room with you guys. What stands out from doing those?
So fun. We did two of them, I think. Did we do three, maybe?
I don't know. Maybe three. I don't remember, but they were great.
One of them's on vinyl, I think, now.
Oh, really?
Maybe it's the first one.
That's very cool.
It's funny it was just an episode of Comedy Bang Bang that Harris and Chelsea and I were just going to go do together. And I think we all worked that day on Parks and just went down to Scott's studio and with no idea what we were going to do, of course, which is very apparent when you listen to it, but I don't know, it was this special combination of people, and Chelsea has this she's one of the funniest people, and she has this really fun thing that she does where she's contributing and participating in the stupidness, but at the same time telling you how stupid and ridiculous you are for the things you say.
That's a great way of describing it.
Both things are really funny. And then there's Harris, who's in kind of providing the basis for all of the stupidity. He's kind of like putting the canvas on the floor. This is getting really pretentious. He's the one that's sort of providing the canvas or whatever it is, and sort of inventing in the thing that we're all kind of playing with. And there was also a really special chemistry between Chelsea and Harris that was really fun because Harris is also like coming up with all this ridiculous stuff and wearing it like a badge of honor and also simultaneously doing like two or three really, really funny things, two or three really great balls he's keeping in the air. And I was just sort of there. I don't really actually remember what we did and said. I just remember it kind of going on and on to where we finished that night and we're just like wondering if we should even put it, if Scott should even put it out because it was just so dumb.
Well, I'm glad that he did.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Me too.
It's a great way to remember Harris Whittle's, you know, with, as well.
I haven't listened to it since then. I feel like it would be really hard to listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah. But if, for anyone who hasn't heard it, it's definitely worth checking out. Do you remember a first time meeting a comedy hero of yours, someone who you really looked up to, or any kind of hero in the show business world, and what you what that was like for you?
I met Steve Martin once. I'm trying to think of other comedy heroes too. I mean, he's sort of the, you know, for a kid who grew up at the time that I grew up in the 80s, it was like, you know, he's the guy. I met him. I went over to his house to pitch him an idea that I had for a movie.
That sounds terrifying.
And it was terrifying. I shouldn't have done it. It was, but like if someone says, hey, you know, presents the opportunity, are you going to not do that?
No. Yeah. You gotta go, but
you gotta go. And I don't even remember if I felt super solid about this idea or if I just wanted to go and see what his house was like and get to meet him. And it was a totally fine meeting and he was cool and funny and I remember, but you know, it didn't go anywhere, nor did it deserve to, but it was this really pleasant meeting. I remember when I came in, he was like, hey, do you want a glass of water or something? And I was like, yeah, sure. Like not knowing what I should say, cause I did not need a glass of water, but he's like, oh, okay. And he runs into the kitchen and comes back and he hands me a glass of water that's like half full. And he just said, I'm sorry. I didn't have time to fill this. And
he's just doing bits.
I just thought that was great. I just loved every second of that. And of getting to sit there with him. It was great.
Yeah. You also had your very public meeting with a childhood hero, Mark Hamill, on TV.
That's right. That was a genuine surprise. I people have asked me
if
that was planned.
I was wondering, yeah, because it looks like, yeah, it could be something that was planned or that you knew was coming. But you, if you did know, it was very good acting that you did, being surprised.
Yeah, it was really weird. And because I remember they were like, so you want to talk about Star Wars on the show tonight? And I was like, you know what? Not really. I feel like everyone talks about like Star Wars. Aren't we sick of Star Wars? Like, I don't want to talk about Star. Like, I feel like I've talked about it too much. You know, whatever. Like, who wants to hear me talk about Star Wars? And they were like, okay. I think you really should though. It'd be really fun. And so. Yeah, I was like, fine, whatever. We'll talk about Star Wars. And
but so you had no idea why they were pushing you to talk about Star Wars.
No, I did not. And it was a truly strange, it was kind of a, you know, one of those moments you see on TV where people are surprised and you know, it's you feel stupid and it just felt, it's a very weird feeling to be surprised on television. With Mark Hamill with a lightsaber with like dry ice smoke around him and weird lights. It was strange, but delightful. I mean, he's a really cool guy.
It did. I don't know if this occurred to you at all, but watching Severance, I kept thinking about Star Wars with the hallways and the scenes where you guys are kind of prowling around the hallways and sneaking and, you know, I kept imagining like, you know, someone's going to come around the corner with a, you know, lightsaber.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that occurred to you at all making it, but.
Well, I know Ben loves Star Trek and he heard about like making the original Star Trek series, they had like three pieces of hallway that they would just use over and over again in different configurations. And so he was sort of thinking of that with that. But we had so much hallway, and the hallway was surrounding the office set. So to get to the office where we shot, we did have to go through a maze of hallways that were always moving around in different configurations because we were shooting in there as well. And so no joke, 85% of the time I got lost trying to get to the set because there were dead ends and it all looks exactly the same. It's all white. It was really crazy.
I wonder
crazy.
If Ben was doing that just to fuck with you guys to like disorient you. And
that's right. You know, and he's going to release footage of us getting lost.
So finally, I like to give my guests a chance to shout out comedy that's making them laugh right now. So what's the last piece of comedy that made you laugh really hard, whether it's a TV show or a movie or stand up or something, just anything that you've seen that really made you laugh recently?
You know, what's really good right now is Abbott Elementary is really, really good.
Totally. Yeah. That's really, yeah. I really, really enjoy that show.
Quinta is really smart, really funny. Really talented.
We can get her on this podcast.
You've got to. She's great.
Yeah, she's really, really funny. That's a great show and a great shout out. Great recommendation.
Yeah. Trying to think of other funny stuff. I'm really excited to see After Party. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I got to see that, and that's really, really fun.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I can't wait. MacGruber. The MacGruber show.
Fantastic.
It's talk about watching something again. I'm going to have to go back and love it so much.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for doing this. And as I said, I've become completely obsessed with Severance. I'm going to tell everyone that I know to
I'm
watch
so
it.
Glad. I am so glad.
And I think people are going to be pretty into it because it's pretty addictive and wild and different and all of those things.
Thank you awesome. So much, man.
Yeah. Good luck with everything. And I can't wait to see Party Down season 3. Very excited.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll come back on for that.
That'll be awesome. All right. That was my conversation with Adam Scott. I am still very much looking forward to the big Party Down reunion and will hopefully have him back on the podcast when that comes out. The first season of Severance is streaming now on Apple TV Plus, and if you happen to be an Emmy voter, please consider Adam Scott. If you want to support The Last Laugh, please help us out by leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We want as many people to hear this show as possible, and you can help by spreading the word and sharing it with your friends. You can find me on Twitter at Matt Wilstein and at thedailybeast.com. And if you're not already, please follow at Last Laugh Pod on Instagram, where you can see photos and videos from all of our episodes and see who is coming up next week on the show. The Last Laugh is distributed by Acast for The Daily Beast, with audio production by Jesse Cannon. Our theme music is by Claude, who you can find on Instagram at claude.mp3. You can find this show every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, you can find show notes and highlights from each episode on thedailybeast.com. See you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.